Okay, everything that we say from here on out will be recorded, so if there's any time you want me to stop the recorder, just let me know, okay?
All right.
My name is Tommy Kiker. I'm a student at Southeastern Seminary. I am interviewing Dr. Robin Hadaway, Associate Professor of Evangelism.
No, Associate Professor of Missions.
Of Missions. I'm an evangelism guy, so I always want to say evangelism. Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. The date is April the 30th, 2004. I am calling him from the Great Commission Center at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary, and have called him, I'm assuming, at your office at Midwestern. Is that correct?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I've got your last name is Hadaway, H-A-D-A-W-A-Y. First name, Robin. Mm-hmm. Do you care to give a middle initial?
D.
D. Male, and are you, if you could give me a race, Caucasian?
Caucasian.
And your age, if it's not too personal?
55.
55. And I need a current address. Your office address would be fine.
Okay, 5001
uh-huh.
North Oak Traffic Way. That's one word, Traffic Way.
Okay. I've
and
got that.
That's, well, you should, probably should put Midwestern Baptist Seminary at the beginning of that.
Okay.
And then Kansas City, Missouri.
Okay.
64118.
64118. That's Kansas City, Missouri. And if you would give me your date of birth.
4/28/49.
Oh, well, happy birthday.
Well, that was Wednesday.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Not too long ago.
Right.
I'm an April baby myself, April the 5th. And where were you born?
Nashville, Tennessee.
Oh, you're Southern Baptist to the roots.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And if you could just, is there any way I could get you to email me a resume attached?
Yeah, I can do that.
That way I don't have to ask you some of this educational history stuff. And your significant occupational experience, that would all be in your resume, and I could get that from that.
Right.
And save us some time. And you're currently, as I've said, serving as Associate Professor of Missions at Midwestern Seminary.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'll go ahead and get to my questions. First of all, again, for the benefit of future researchers, if you could just give us a little background information. What I'm specifically looking for is from the time you were born to your testimony, to your call into ministry, salvation, and then specifically your service with the Foreign Mission Board, International Mission Board, and those type of things. If you leave anything out that I am really looking for, I'll just ask you another question after you share it. Just a basic testimony is what I'm looking for.
Okay. Well, I our family did not grow up in, I didn't grow up in a Christian home. We went to, till I was 13 years old, we went to the Christian Science Church.
Okay.
And then pastor of First Baptist Church, Tallahassee, Florida, where I grew up, led my parents to the Lord, so we started going to church, First Baptist Church, when I was 13.
Okay.
Although I wasn't saved until I was in college at Memphis State.
Uh-huh.
And a fellow witnessed to me at my fraternity house.
Oh, mercy.
At Memphis State, and I accepted the Lord when I was 21 in 1971.
Right.
Went into the Air Force as an officer, got out as a captain, and resigned my commission to go to seminary.
Okay.
And so went to Dallas Seminary for 2 years.
Okay.
And transferred to Southwestern, graduated from Southwestern in 78.
Mm-hmm.
And then pastored, this is in my resume, by pastored churches in Arizona, in California, a church in California, then went to the mission field.
Okay.
So we served with the International Mission Board for 20 years, except for a two-year absence when I pastored in Arizona, mm-hmm. while we had a medical situation with one of our children.
Okay,
so
yeah.
We served on the mission field until August of last year, 2003.
Okay.
So we've been teaching here full-time at the seminary since.
Okay.
Well, actually, I resigned from the IMB effective November 30th, 2003, so we've really just been off salary with the IMB for about 5 months.
Okay. Yeah. All right. And what was your last position with the IMB?
I was regional leader, which is the same as the old title, Area Director, Regional Leader for Eastern South America, and I supervised all the missionaries in Brazil, Uruguay, and Paraguay.
Okay.
International Mission Board missionaries.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. All right. I wanted to ask you, from your experience as a regional leader, area director, what were some of the measures? My whole topic is, you know, the BF&M 2000 issue.
Right.
But even in a broader sense, the role of theological accountability in missions. And what would you say as a regional leader were some of the measures you saw useful for theological accountability prior to even the rewriting of the BF&M?
In the IMB?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
In your personal experience.
Well, there wasn't a lot of theological accountability. The accountability was in the personnel processing, and people are asked to write out a personal theology. They're asked to sign they don't sign the Baptist Faith and Message, but they sign a piece of paper that says they have read the Baptist Faith and Message, and either they just sign without annotation, say they agree with it, or they sign with an annotation and state their disagreement, and then agree to teach according with, not contrary to the Baptist Faith and Message.
Right.
That's pretty much all the accountability the IMB has. I wouldn't go any further than that.
Was there anything specific that could take place on the field that you saw happen or that you were able to do outside of the particular case that you know that I'm familiar with, where you had to confront some deviancy? And or if you did have to do that, how would that be handled, you know, after they've been on the field? Was there any method in place that could bring what we would consider teaching outside of the parameters of our Baptist beliefs? How would that be dealt with?
Well, of course, there's a difference in what the regional leader can do and what a regular missionary could do.
Right.
I did have an instance where my wife, we were at a meeting, my wife heard a lady say, well, I preach from pulpits and give invitations from Brazilian Baptist churches. And so I went to her and told her that, asked her to stop that practice because I didn't think it was biblical.
Right.
And as being a regional leader, she agreed to do that. Now,
okay.
If I'd been a regular missionary,
right,
that regular missionary would have had to written me or the other regional leader, and depending on the enforcement of that particular regional leader, whether something had been done or not. And then there's always a little bit of a subtle pressure not to do anything.
Unless it's absolutely necessary.
Serious.
Right.
And let's see. Now, early in my career, 1985, we did have a situation at the Baptist Seminary in Kenya where I served. Well, I didn't serve at the Kenya Seminary. It was actually the Baptist Seminary of East Africa, which is in Arusha, Tanzania. And I was on the board of the seminary.
Okay.
I was elected to the board, but the year prior to my election to the board of it, there was going to be a professor coming from Ruslakan, and actually he taught in the seminary one course. It was more like a J term, something like that.
Right.
One of my friends had this guy in class in Germany and said that he had heard the guy say in class that no thinking Christian believes in the virgin birth. And so I wrote a letter with this fellow by the name of Gunter Wagner, and it's the German spelling of Wagner, so
right.
Wagner.
Yeah.
Should not teach at a Southern Baptist school. And so I wrote a letter to the board, and the board did agree with me on that.
Okay.
So what you had to do in the early days was write a letter. A lot of people don't want to write letters, so.
And so there was kind of a system, a protocol that the first level you would go to would be your regional leader if you were a missionary on the field and saw some sort of deviancy.
Yes, like in my case, though, it was a national institution, and
yeah.
So I had to write a letter to this institution that wasn't actually owned by the IMB, but it was, well, actually, it really was owned by the old Foreign Mission Board, but
okay.
It had board members who were both Kenyans, Tanzanians, and missionaries, and so, you know, the way they said it, well, they couldn't actually do anything about it. You had to write a letter to the board. So I did write a letter to the board, and thankfully, the board composed of nationals and missionaries did agree with me not to invite the guy.
Okay.
But I would say, yes, the protocol would be for the missionary to write a letter to the regional leader, area director. These days, I guess they'd send an email.
Yeah.
Before email, they would just write a letter and requesting it.
Okay. With, in your opinion, was there any way to bring about a measure of theological accountability, taking into consideration the serious shift in ideology of the Southern Baptist Convention over the last 25 years? Was there any way to be assured of the theological soundness of our missionaries rather than having them sign an affirmation of the BFNM 2000? In your opinion, could that have been handled in a way outside of the actual signing of all the missionaries to that affirmation?
Well, certainly I was in favor of all the missionaries asked to sign an affirmation of the 2000. Dr. Patterson and I would say that's the minimum.
Yeah.
I would have liked to have seen other things done. I don't know what else could be done.
Yeah.
Other than calling everybody in one by one and you know, asking them different things. But what happens is, obviously, some would sign honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Some perhaps signed, we don't know, dishonestly.
Yeah.
Some resigned with integrity, and I respect those that couldn't sign and decided to leave.
Right.
Other people left and said it was other issues when it probably really was the Baptist faith and message. So
yeah,
you have those four categories probably.
I obviously have interviewed others that come from a different perspective than ours. they actually know factually of people that have signed just a few years from retirement. But I was pleased to see at least that they recognized that an individual that did that had lost a sense of integrity. So I was at least pleased to see that. And from my study, I at least can have a better deal of respect for those that, you know, chose not to sign and were honest about it and real about it.
Yeah, I had one guy actually resign because he heard that the missionaries probably would be asked to sign it a year before they were actually asked.
Okay. I'm sure it was something that was in the grassroots of the missionaries being talked about.
Right.
Let me get your insights. I've been studying, and the numbers I get are out of the 5,000 plus missionaries we have, some 70 resigned, retired, some would want to say fired, but I don't know that I see that in a very a number of cases, you know, not too many cases.
Right.
I found them to be, for the most part, people that had been on the field probably even prior to the change in our convention. Would you say that that's an accurate statement, and that might be one of the biggest issues, is that they were brought in under a different type of process of interviewing our applicants, and that we might be in better shape for the future, considering now that any applicant would have this type of accountability before they go into the field?
Well, I had a good number of those that didn't sign in South America. I probably had 8 couples, 10 couples.
Okay.
Nobody actually was fired from our region.
Okay.
Some had one or two that were actually said, you know, just fire me. I'm not going to sign. All mine resigned rather than sign the ones. Okay, some resigned beforehand. I did have a couple retire citing the Baptist Faith and Message that was going to stay, but they went ahead and retired.
Mm-hmm.
I would say about 40%. Well, you say 40% actually came out after 1979 when Dr. Rogers was first elected.
Okay, okay.
But obviously some of them came out, some of them even came out, one couple came out like 7 or 8 years ago, so one 10, 12 years ago, and then the rest probably within the last 20 years. I just had probably about two units, four
okay.
people that would predate the conservative resurgence.
Okay, okay. So probably not quite as strong a connection there, in your region at least, as what I was seeing or thought I was seeing.
Well, the thing is that you see the trustees gradually changed.
Right.
Adrian Rogers was, his appointments, 79, he didn't, his first appointments didn't come on the board until 80. Well, they weren't really felt until 83.
Okay.
They didn't have a majority of the board until, I think, around 86 or 87.
Right.
And up until 87, and then Dr. Parks didn't resign until 91.
Right.
So you had a, the previous vice president of personnel was quite sympathetic with those who would mm-hmm. not sign, affirm the 63 Baptist Faith and Message, much less the 2000.
Okay, okay. Now you said you had about, that you answered part of my next question, how many missionaries from your region refused to sign the BF&M, and you said about 10 units. 8 to 10.
Yeah.
Okay.
You could put in that category.
Okay. What were the main reasons, if they did state any reasons that they, I could probably guess them, but what were the main reasons that you saw that they refused to sign it?
They stated that, well, most of mine said that if anybody wants to question my theology, let them come out here and ask me questions.
Mm-hmm.
They sent me out here, and no one has questioned my theology since I've been here. I don't need to sign something else in order to stay here. It was pretty much what most would say.
Okay.
A couple just resigned and didn't give a reason, just they were philosophically opposed to the Baptist Faith and Message.
Okay, so they didn't give specific reasons other than the fact that it was kind of impersonal. And that they felt somebody should come to them individually?
Yeah.
On those type of issues?
Uh-huh. And
okay.
then I did have a significant number in my region who had a problem with the women in ministry issue, and some stayed and signed an annotation to that effect.
Okay. And those were allowed to stay on?
Yes, but,
okay.
And you can print this for the record, I told my superiors, Dr. Jerry Rankin and Dr. Avery Willis, that those were not okay with me.
Yeah, yeah.
And they said in a public meeting of the regional leaders, we will handle those. And so they approved them. I did not.
Okay, okay. I've got you. Let's turn our attention to a specific account.
Yeah.
I interviewed Miss Ida Mae Hayes.
That was fun.
Well, it was quite interesting. That's to say the least. And she was very very receptive, very open to share. I've heard her side of the perspective. Her perspective.
Yeah.
I would just be interested, just real quickly, if you would just summarize her specific situation, what you can, and how you think that was handled from your perspective.
Well, I'm certainly the one that handled it.
Right.
So I have the perspective.
Right.
One of my associates, I believe it was Brent Ray, who you could also talk to, but he lived in Brasilia. He called me and said, "Did you heard that Ida Mae Hayes has been ordained and named pastor emeritus of her Brazilian church.
Right.
I'm thinking this was February, and you know, I'm getting fuzzy on the year, but it was 2000. It was probably would have been, this would have definitely been 2001, could have been 2002.
Yeah. I can tell you, she was ordained on January the 28th, 2001.
Okay.
And named pastor emeritus. I've got my notes from her interview as well.
All right.
So okay. She was named, and then...
Well, I heard about it in February, so it's
okay.
2001.
Okay, yeah, 2001. Okay.
All right. She was set to go home
right.
on her final, they call it final state assignment or final furlough, which
uh-huh.
means she'd still have a year on salary with the IMB because they let people build up time. And so she left. I can't remember, maybe probably in February, March, something
mm-hmm.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I talk with my superiors and with my trustee committee.
Yeah.
And of course they were upset about it, as was I, because I felt like that this violated the Baptist faith and message.
Mm-hmm.
That a woman would see herself as a pastor emeritus.
Right.
And the IMB very has a lot of problem with a woman being going out ordained. Now, occasionally, if she did not push it,
mm-hmm.
and it was done because the church wanted her to be ordained, a few times in the past they've allowed a woman to go to the field ordained.
Okay.
But lately I don't think so. But anyway, that wasn't the issue, the ordination. It was the pastor emeritus. And it was the fact that it was done, you know, right at the end of her career. And so I talked with we had a trustee meeting up in Glorieta, New Mexico.
Okay.
And I met with the trustees and with Dr. Willis
okay.
in the trustee meeting, overseas VP, and we talked about what to do. It was decided that myself, and we included my wife, so that the lady, Miss Hayes, would be comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
A trustee, my wife, and I would meet with her. Now, a new chairman was elected, chairman of our committee, and he couldn't come, and so Johnny Nance from Las Vegas, Nevada was able to come, and so he flew in from Las Vegas. Kathy and I flew up from Brazil. I think we actually were on the way somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't come up just for this, but we I rented a room at the Crown Room of Delta Airlines Crown Room in one of them in the Atlanta airport. She had brought a lady with her
mm-hmm.
That was downstairs. Of course, you have to call up because she's not a member. I'm a member of the Crown Room. And so when I didn't really want someone else, not with the IMB there, so when she saw my wife was with me, she did not ask for this lady to come up. And I would have declined had she asked, but she
okay.
did not ask for the lady to come up. Now,
okay.
it would be interesting to know what her side was, but she never asked, and I
yeah.
never asked her. And so my wife and Johnny Nance and I met with Ida Mae Hayes there in the Crown Room, and we asked her to rescind her ordination and her... pastor emeritus role
mm-hmm.
and return it to the church in Brazil. She told us that that she didn't ask for it. It was strictly honorary.
Mm-hmm.
And the committee was very gracious to her. Okay, and she said she'd think about it.
Right.
And then she sent us an email saying that she declined, that it was the church that did it,
mm-hmm.
and it wasn't up to her to rescind it or abrogate it.
What were y'all aware of her side of the that it was something that was kind of encouraged for, she says, over 10 years they had tried to bestow this upon her. Were y'all aware of that already?
I don't remember telling me that. She mm-hmm. could have said that.
Okay.
She just emphasized that she didn't want it mm-hmm. and that...
Right.
And what was interesting, she said she didn't want to be a pastor. And then yeah. she goes ahead, and after she retires, she accepts the pastorate in North Carolina.
Well, how do you feel? What's your response to the fact that she's pastoring a church now under that ordination? From what I understand, she was not ordained again. So, you know, do you have any response to that?
Well, my response is that evidently she lied to us, because she said that she didn't want to be a pastor, and yet within a year and a half of a meeting with Johnny Nance and I, she accepts a pastorate.
Right. Okay.
Now, either she changed her mind mm-hmm. or she was lying to us.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, she gives a testimony of God, you know, opening up that calling in her life. I don't think it was anything that she was actively seeking at the time, but obviously, she has changed her stance on that.
Well, I don't see. Well, I would just question. God is not in getting us to do unscriptural.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And she would say that's a personal interpretation, I would believe. So, I've got another question. Was this the first? She was coming stateside, from what I understand.
Yeah.
And so was this the first time that you had been able to speak to her on the issue? Was at the Atlanta airport?
Yes.
Okay.
Because
okay.
she had already left. I mean,
right.
When I heard about it, it was within a... She might have already had left by the time I heard about it.
Okay. Okay.
She didn't publicize it among the other missionaries that this ordination was going to happen.
Right. She seems to think that the article in the Alabama Baptist uh-huh. Was what kind of tipped folks off, but you say that you received a phone call from another missionary on the field.
Yeah, now it's possible that the article in the Alabama Baptist...
She said it didn't come out till March. Her dates might be late
possible,
on that, too.
Yeah, and the article in the Alabama Baptist was picked up.
Mm-hmm.
I think what happened was that I was in the States for some other reason.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody in the publicity department, the IMB, saw that, asked me about it. I called down to Brazil, and they had heard about it.
Right.
To be honest with you, I don't remember if I heard about it through notification by the IMB from the Alabama Baptist article, or if someone had called me about it.
Okay, but you had just become aware of it.
I just became aware of it there in that February, March time frame.
Okay.
But, you know, we're talking 3 years ago now.
Yeah, it kind of all goes together, doesn't it?
Right.
She makes mention, and if you don't feel that you can respond to this, just, you know, let me know, of the church that had ordained her received an anonymous phone call. Do you have any idea about that?
I have no idea. She knows it wasn't me, because I don't speak Portuguese.
She she says she knows who it is, but because of the caller ID, and she said it, you know, she didn't tell me who it was, but I didn't know.
Yeah.
I was just curious if you had any response to that.
No.
Okay.
And I don't know who it would have been.
Right. Let me ask you this question, and this is something that just arose to me, and I'm I hear from your voice that this might have been something that was above, you know, that was in the hand of your superiors. She mentioned that for the last 11 years, she served as the director of missions in her area. And I was just curious why nothing was done or said for those 11 years as she served as a pastor to pastors. You know, you see where I'm coming from?
Well... You know, when I went down to Brazil in 96, mm-hmm. 97, transferring from Africa, we did have her and another woman serving as director of missions, not supervising missionaries, and in a sense, you know, you'd have, let's just say that I supervise my missionaries, they all work for me, but like in a Baptist association, I don't think it's scriptural myself, but you could make a case that the DOM doesn't supervise the pastors in the association.
Right, doesn't really have authority.
He doesn't have authority.
Okay.
And it's just, it's sort of like, and I'll tell you this, certainly she had no staff, so she didn't supervise anyone. She was filling in as the director of missions, as another woman did in the Rio.
Okay.
So since she was going to retire in a couple of years, I did not think that was really worth going after. If she had been supervising missionaries, then I would have dealt with that.
Okay, that helps me. So it was kind of a little different role than what we see as DOMs in the States.
Well, I think I'd say it'd be about the same, but the DOM role in the States, they don't really supervise their pastors, nor do they have much authority.
Okay, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of so it wasn't until an actual church that she was given the pastor role where it really became an issue with the BF&M 2000.
Yes, it became an issue with me, and I will say that I'm the one that felt like that it was, because the 2001 BF&M had been signed.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like that she was outside the parameters of where a missionary should be.
Right.
And she was going to still be on salary with the board for another 8 months.
Right.
If we were
going
to pay her, that she ought to, she should not do that.
This is my final question, unless you have any more that you want to speak to. I would just want to get your perspective. Do you see at times that there may be some issues in the IMB and in our core of missionaries that at times we will desire a certain doctrine, a certain theology, but there's some inconsistency between our doctrine and our practice? Specifically, I'm at Southeastern. Obviously, we send out a lot of couples, but we send out a lot of single young ladies sometimes,
right,
too. And I sometimes feel like we put some of these single young ladies in positions where they don't have much choice but to, it seems to me, at least kind of threaten that line of what I would believe would be biblical roles for women and men. For example, I had a young lady who's a friend of mine that had somebody led to Christ, and there was no one, you know, where she could, they needed to be baptized, but there was no one, and she struggled with, you know, what to do, because she couldn't, you know, get a baptism for this person without feeling like she was crossing the line for a while, and then finally she did it, you know. Those type of situations, do you think sometimes there's a little bit of inconsistency there? And what would be your suggestion to fix that?
Well, there is the problem. The reason there is an inconsistency, and certainly there is out there between regions, is there's no policy of the IMB.
Okay.
And Dr. Idle and I have proposed that the IMB have some parameters of what a woman should be allowed to do.
Right.
And they don't address what a woman should be able to do and what a woman shouldn't be able to do on the mission field at the Missionary Learning Center. I think they should address it.
Okay. So you would think that a lot of that could be dealt with even in the application process and in the initial training process?
The application process, I think that you deal more with theology.
Okay.
I think it would have to be in the training process.
Okay.
You could certainly warn people, hey, if you plan on preaching and baptizing, you know, don't apply.
But
I think they really need to be told, if you're going to be an IMB missionary out there, you can't do these things. And right now they're not told that.
And that kind of puts them in a, you know, that can put them in some awkward positions too, with people that really don't want to do anything contrary
right.
to scriptural roles, but they're put in positions where, in order to do what they've been told to do, you know, they have to struggle with whether or not to cross that line.
Well, also you got some that want to cross those roles.
Well, exactly.
They're trying to jump the fence.
Yeah, exactly. So you're speaking of the letter that Dr. Idle sent to the trustees of the IMB. Is that what you're talking about? Is that part of that?
Right.
Okay. I'm going to cut off the recording.
Okay.
But I want to just ask you. I'll just tell you a couple other things.
Oh, well, one more thing for the recording.
Sure.
Now the trustees, when Ida May Hayes decided not to renounce her ordination,
right,
return to ordination, the trustees went ahead and allowed her to retire.
Right. And from what I understand, the IMB statement was just that they do not recognize her
right.
ordination and her pastor emeritus.
That's right.
Okay.
That was the statement that was officially in the records of the IMB.
Okay. All right. Hold on just one moment.